Blog Talk Radio.
I want to know, are you ready? America. Thanks for joining us. I want to know, are you ready to take back our country? As the name of this song states, are you ready to join together on common ground? By that I mean God, family, country, constitution. If so, you've tuned into the right place. If not, hang out with us. You may find there's more right in you than you know. I'm Gary Benford, host of United Patriots Uprising, coming to you every other Monday night for 2 hours of guest-driven, conservative-based political talk. It's all about the message, friends, looking to enlighten, edify, and equip, so each and every one of us will be able to engage, expose, and defeat the radical left's Marxist agenda in the arena of ideas, leading to a red tsunami at the polling places. So are you with me, America? If so, strap on your helmet and take up your shield, because we're in a war for the soul of our nation, and we're not about to lose. Socialism, not in our America, not on our watch. No way, no shape, no how. Host Gary Benford. Gary Benford right here, your host of United Patriots Uprising. Glad to be back with you. If you want to talk to us or some of our outstanding guests, the call-in number is 347-637-3942. 347-637-3942. And there's several ways that you can get not only this show, but all the previous broadcasts. I do the show every other Monday night. This is the 26th show, and all of the shows are stacked one on top of each other. You can find them at facebook.com/United Patriots Uprising with Gary Benford. If you want to see or listen to any of the previous broadcasts, you can go to facebook.com/United Patriots Uprising with Gary Benford, or you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Nation. That's blogtalkradio.com/Patriot Nation. And this is my 26th show. And as you know, we do this every other Monday. However, there will be a special show on June 28th, next Monday. The reason being, on June 29th, 2020, that was my first broadcast. June 29th, 2020, the first broadcast, we hit the ground running with Nick Searcy, Burgess Owens, Morgan Brittany, and Curtis Bowers, Melissa Petrie, but she was on the board for my very first show. And I wanted to do an anniversary show and bring back a number of guests who not only have been on the show at least three times over this past year, but they also have become personal friends, people who I can call anytime, they've called me anytime, and we can talk about anything and everything. So the list, the cast of thousands that will be on the show next week: John DeLemme, founder of Conservative Business Journal. The actress Morgan Brittany, remember her from Dallas? Remember, she's the one that killed Bobby Ewing, Patrick Duffy. Bobby Ewing, Patrick Duffy, three times on the show. Morgan, who's a co-founder of Politichicks, she'll be here. Gene Ho. If you remember Gene Ho, celebrity photographer, he was Donald Trump's personal photographer during the 2016 presidential election. He is now the photographer for Diamond and Silk. A dear friend, I say this from the standpoint of anytime I need to know anything about what's going on governmental, I put in a call to Clara Lopez, former CIA operative. Dr. Elena George will be here, and she has been filling all our people in on what has been going on with this virus and the vaccine and all the things that have been going on that the media doesn't want you to know about. Ron Edwards, the smoothest voice in radio, host of the Ron Edwards American Experience. Lucretia Hughes, the Georgia activist. Lucretia Hughes News at Lucretia Hughes, that's her show. Virginia Prodan, stared down an assassin's gun in communist Romania and lived to tell about it. And Nick Searcy. Nick has a new movie out called America, America, God Shed His Grace on Thee. Nick has not been on the show but once, but he was my very first guest. And when I called him and said, and emailed him and said, Nick, I need you back. He said, hey, I'm there. So Nick will be back, and then we'll bring him back on to talk about his movie. So this is going to be a hot summer, and boy, we're really going to try and give you the best conservative political talk we can. We're going to get into some serious topics, people. One topic is going to be critical race theory. That's coming up. Another is going to be election integrity. That's coming up. Another one is going to be, what can we do to save our kids, our school kids? Another topic is going to be politics and religion. Do they really mix? And then there's going to be the show on the 26th of July. And usually you don't talk about shows too far in advance, but I'm going to hype this one. Because on the 26th of July, we're going to talk about how to cancel the cancel culture with former Colorado Senator Ted Harvey, who's the chairman of the Defeat the President campaign. It's a website, Defeat the President. You can go to stopjoe.com. He'll be on. Tracy Beans will be back. Tracy Beans, the editor-in-chief of Uncovered DC, she'll be back on. And I am beyond honored to say on the 26th, circle your calendar, June 26th, right here on United Patriots Uprising, 7 o'clock, I am beyond honored to have as my guest General Michael Flynn. He's confirmed he'll be here on the 26th, and we're going to rock the house. Speaking of rock the house, when I think of a man's man, if they had a picture in an encyclopedia or a picture in a dictionary of a man's man, to me, that would be Thomas Holman. Thomas is a 34-year veteran of law enforcement. Started out as a police officer in West Carthage, New York. In 1984, he joined what was then known as the Immigration and Naturalization Service. He became a Border Patrol agent. In 2013, he was appointed to the position of Executive Director of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. At that time, a Washington Post article stated Thomas Holman deports people, and he's really good at it. In January of 2017, he was elevated to Director of Immigration and Customs Services, ICE. By May of 2017, he announced that ICE had arrested more than 41,000 people, having President Trump entered the White House, over a 38% increase over what had happened during the Obama administration. He resigned from ICE, which I'm sorry to hear, but, you know, he did in June of 2018. But let me tell you something. I've heard Tom speak twice at Rock the Red, and this is a man that knows illegal immigration. This is a man that knows what's going down at the border, and this is a man that turns over every rock, turns over every stone, says what he wants to say, dares you to do something about it if you don't like it, and he's a man of truth. I am so happy to finally be able to bring to United Patriots Uprising Mr. Thomas Holman. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thomas, I really appreciate it because, you know, I've been trying to get you for 2 years. It's your wealth of knowledge is just, you know, every time I hear you, you blow my mind. So tell the people what you spoke about. Focus of your speech a couple of weeks ago at Rock the Red was about.
I was talking about the Biden administration has sold out this country and sold out our sovereignty and sold out border security to win an election. Joe Biden, during the campaign, made promises so he can win the progressive left. He knew he needed their votes, so he sold us out. He made promises that he was going to put a moratorium on all deportations, that he was going to end the Remain in Mexico program, get back to catch and release, that he would shut down ICE detention, and they would, you know, cripple ICE. ICE wouldn't be able to arrest people being illegally in the United States anymore. He promised them free health care. When you make, and he promised amnesty, when you say those types of things to the entire world, people are going to come. And when he got elected, I said, I wrote an op-ed in July last year for Fox News saying, if Joe Biden becomes president, we lose the border. People say I was a fearmonger. I was just trying to get President Trump reelected. Well, hate to say I sold you so, but we have lost control of the border. The border is now controlled by the Mexican cartels, and Joe Biden handed them the keys. He made the promises of bringing people to this country. And this isn't by, I did my speech down in Rock Dread. I said, this wasn't an accident. This wasn't mismanagement. This is by design. This is what open borders looks like. And this is what Joe Biden promised, you know, during the election. ICE is no longer able to arrest someone being in the country. Look, this is how bad it is. People understand this. ICE is no longer able to arrest people that are in the United States illegally and been ordered removed by a federal judge. So they had the due process, a great taxpayer expense. They've been ordered removed by a federal judge. They're here illegally. ICE can't even talk to them. You got to be here illegally and be convicted of a serious crime for ICE to even prioritize your removal. So all these thousands of people you see being released at the border every day, they're not going anywhere. They're here, and they're going to stay here. And the reason everybody asks you, why would the Democrats do this? Why would they, you know, open the border up, and why would they not remove them? Because it's for the same reason they overturned the census rule that Trump had. Now these people will be counted in the next census. Millions will be counted in the next census. What does that mean? That means more seats in the House for the Democrats, which leads to electoral college, which means preferential power. Some deal will make them citizens, so amnesty will be able to vote. The Democrats are playing the long game. They're playing the smart game. And unfortunately, Republicans got to wake up and start fighting. They got to be street fighters and get going at this. Because I was in Texas. I met with 20 Texas congressmen, Republicans, and I told them, you don't pull your heads out of your butt and start fighting this like a street fight, you're not going to win another election in 15 years. This is about perpetual power of government and Congress. The Democratic side of the House has sold us out for perpetual power.
You've got that right, and it's a scary thing. And I have a question here for the electorate. Thomas, they tried to scare us with this China virus thing, right? And they, oh, it's going to kill everybody, and oh, you got to wear the mask, and oh, you got to social distance. Yet, why was it that we weren't able to convince the American people, look, people, they don't mean it, because they're letting Antifa and Black Lives Matter in the streets, and they're letting people come across the border, no mask, we don't know what they're coming across with. Shouldn't that, how did they sell that to the American public? Shouldn't the people have said, hey, if this is such a killer, why aren't they closing up the border?
I don't think they sold it to the majority of the American public. It's just the media who's just an extension of the Democratic Party. They're not talking about it. The only network talking about is Fox News. I mean, I'm raising hell every day on Fox News, but you go to MSNBC, you go to, you know, CNN, you go to all these major networks, NBC, no one's talking about the border crisis. And look, you're right. We know for a fact, undisputable fact, that this administration knowingly released hundreds of illegal aliens with COVID into our communities. We know for a fact that they're not detaining these people. If you listen to the president and listen to the Secretary of Homeland Security 2 weeks ago, they were bragging that they made such progress because there's no more overcrowding in Border Patrol facilities. They've addressed that concern. How do they do that? They release people quicker. So they stop vetting the sponsors. They release people quicker in the United States, and they call that a success. I said, you're ridiculous, because the quicker you release people, once that word gets out down south, the cartels are going to use it to just sell – more people come to the United States saying, look, you're not even being detained. They're processing you and releasing you. So the Biden administration, when he wants to tell the American people, we made great progress, there's no overcrowding. Well, how did you do it? You release these people into the United States, never be seen again. And not only are they releasing the United States, that's a processing, they're not even being given a court date to go see an immigration judge. They're not being detained. They're not getting a medical physical. And no one's talking about it except, well, hopefully your show. And that's why I don't mind doing shows and big conservative talk shows, because I'm a one-man show. We need people like you out there talking about this stuff. We need more people out there talking, trying to educate American people what's really going on. So did they convince the majority of Americans? No. They're just not talking about it on most of the media networks.
Well, thank you very much for the compliment. And, you know, I think, like as you heard at Rock the Red, Barbara Arthur, and as you know, Gene Hoes, who running for mayor, a lot of people are starting to get involved politically, not because they ever wanted to be political, but because they realize it's now or never, we're going to lose this country. And if I have a voice and if I have the ability and the skills to try and influence people, let me go out there and try and get me a seat, be it in city council, be it on the school board, be it in Congress or wherever. And you have been sounding this alarm. Now, a lot of people may not know, you were brought into this initially by Barack Obama. Will you please contrast the difference between doing your job under Barack Obama, doing your job under Donald Trump, and what it would like be now if you were in there with Lyden, Hyde, and Joe Biden?
Well, look, Joe, you know, I work with President Obama. Matter of fact, he gave me a presidential rank award. So apparently he thought I was doing a good job, and that's when that Washington Post article came out. Look, we removed record number of illegal aliens. I did my job. I did it well. And I got the presidential rank award for it. But it all blew up in Obama because everybody started calling me Porter in Chief. So the last couple of years of his administration, they started backing down. Under President Trump, when President Trump made me I was the first acting director of ICE, the first one that actually came up to the ranks. I wasn't a political appointee. I wasn't some lawyer that was doing a favor and helped him with the campaign. I was an ICE officer. Spent 34 years. So as the director of ICE, I had 20,000 men and women working for me, and I never asked them to do anything. I didn't do myself because I came up through the ranks. I was an agent. So in President Trump, you know, he wrote a bunch of executive orders, but he could have very easily, and I told him this when I talked to him all the time, you could have said it one sentence. Because the executive orders he wrote pretty much said, okay, now you will enforce the laws as they're written. You will enforce the laws on the book that were enacted by Congress. And that's what we did under President Trump. And people said, well, you know, you get the left saying, well, you guys are just separating families. You're destroying neighborhoods. No. If you look at what ICE did under President Trump, 91% of everybody ICE arrested, 91% of every arrest in the interior of the United States was someone who's here illegally and convicted of a crime or was pending charges, which means we found in the county jail, which means they're probably one of the bar boy. ICE and Border Patrol morale is all-time high because they got to uphold their oaths. They got to enforce laws to protect this country. Under President Biden, and this is what's so unbelievable under President Biden, because you got President Joe Biden, who was the vice president under Obama when we removed all those people. You got Secretary Mayorkas, who was a deputy secretary under Jay Johnson. When they were there, we had a family surge, much like you see today, of families and children in 2014, 2015, when he was vice president and Alejandro Mayorkas was deputy secretary. They know what causes these surges. They know how to stop them. I was there. We stopped that surge in FY15. How did we do it? We built detention facilities. We detained people. We made them see a judge. 90% lost their cases. We sent them home. The numbers went down. What are these same two men doing now? They're doing the complete opposite of what they know works. Joe Biden made promises that he knew would cause a surge. And the secretary, instead of detaining people, he's releasing people. Instead of making them see a judge, they're not even scheduling for a court hearing. And they crippled ICE, so ICE can't remove people anymore. So what's most disturbing to me under this administration is these two men, based on experience, based on working with me for years, I've met both these men numerous times. They know what causes surges, and they caused it anyways. They know how to stop the surges, and they're not doing it. This administration has not done one thing to slow the flow. Matter of fact, I'm shocked because every 2 weeks they make another announcement that's going to bring more people, like we're releasing them quicker. Now, last week, they said, well, now the Attorney General says he's going to open up asylum to those who are escaping domestic violence and gang war. And now anybody from Central America can claim asylum. So every week when you think they might do something to slow the flow and try to control the border, they send out another enticement to bring more. Again, not by accident. This is by design. This is open borders.
Well, wow. You know, I got to ask you this question because we know Barack Obama is a Marxist, and, you know, he was deporting people left and right back when you first got in there. Did he do that because he had to, because the climate of the country hadn't reached where it is now, where he hadn't aggressed to the point where America is just going to stick its head between its you-know-what and let them pull this off? Or would he have wanted to do what Biden's doing now back then, but he just couldn't get away with it?
President Obama?
Yeah. See, because he was deporting people.
I think
now they're not.
President Obama gave many speeches just like Schumer has, and just like Bill Clinton has. At one point, let's put it this way. Joe Biden voted for border walls in the Secure Fence Act of 2006. Joe Biden voted for walls. Hillary Clinton voted for walls. Schumer voted for walls. All these people, and President Obama, when he was a senator, voted for a wall. Now, all of a sudden, Biden, Obama, Clinton, and Schumer think a wall is a terrible thing. It's a racist wall. Walls don't work. And these are the same people that spent billions of dollars on wall in 2006. This is just politics. So I actually think me and President Obama didn't agree on his immigration stance on most of the things. But in the beginning of his administration, he actually let us do our job. And we did a lot. But like I said, during the second time, his second 4 years, things got cut drastically because, again, politics took charge. And he was losing, you know, the Democratic Party was upset with him, called him deported chief. So all of a sudden he changed, not for the good of the country, but to protect his legacy and his image for the Democratic Party. Joe Biden actually at one point believed in border security. But, again, he wanted to be president so bad that he's willing to sell his soul to the progressive left and open his border up. And people need to understand, this isn't just about immigration. I'm at the National Sheriff's Association in Phoenix, Arizona. Hundreds of sheriffs here. The border's out of control, not with just illegal immigration, but with fentanyl, black tar heroin, cocaine, gang violence. Sheriffs down here, the biggest problem right now, they can't get enough body bags. They're finding so many dead people in the desert, in the river, that the drugs come across at a record flow. Joe Biden, this isn't just about illegal immigration. People need to understand that. He's sold out this country, and he's caused a national security crisis because the Border Patrol's already said 40 to 50% of their manpower is no longer on the line because they're taking care of these families and children. When 40 to 50% of the Border Patrol is no longer on the line, that means 40 to 50% of this border is unprotected. That's when the criminal cartels smuggle the opioids and the fentanyl, then the gang members and the people that want to do this country harm. Joe Biden created a national security crisis to become president. And you don't see AOC, when under President Trump, she was down there screaming and yelling about how these people are being treated. They're being treated a hell of a lot worse now than they ever were in President Trump. But where's she at? Where's all the progressives at now? They're keeping their mouth shut. Things are much worse now, humanity-wise, a lot worse. I've been down there four times now than they were in President Trump. You don't hear a word because it's all about politics. It's not about truth. It's about politics. Again, it's about future political power. Nothing else matters.
Please listen to him, people, because Thomas Holman knows what he's talking about. And as you, anybody that's listened to this show, you know I've been beating this Marxist communist drum for a long period of time. And here's what he means. It's about politics. You've got to understand what their tactic is. Their tactic is to start a fire. Their tactic is to create chaos. Their tactic is to get black against white, rich against poor, male against female, legal immigrants against illegal immigrants, create all this chaos in the country. They started it, and then they want to say, now we have to come in and ride in on a white horse and correct the problem with their socialist Marxist dream for America. We can't allow this to happen. Tom, what is the solution? Is there one? What can we do?
You already said it. So it's the same thing I said down the street. This isn't, first of all, 2022, we need to take back Congress. Okay, that's it. But we can't wait that long. So your listeners need to call up their congressman, Republican or Democrat, and hold them accountable. Like I said to them when I was sitting with an argument with a couple of congresswomen, I told them, you work for me. You're accountable to me. Don't be sitting there yelling at me and pointing your finger at me. You work for me, Miss Congressperson. I pay your salary. I'm a taxpayer. You're accountable to me. So do your damn job and secure the border. There's no downside on secure border. I don't care if Republican, a Democrat, independent. There's no downside on less illegal immigration. There's no downside on less illegal drug flow. There's no downside on taking billions of dollars worth of criminal cartels who have murdered Border Patrol agents. There's no downside on 31% of women that make that journey not being raped. There's no downside on children not drowning in a river or dying in the desert. There is no downside on secure border. So stop the crap in the politics and secure our border and protect our sovereignty. Every nation in this world enforces their border laws. We are not, you got to understand, this administration is not enforcing the law on the border. They're not enforcing immigration law on the interior. They've walked away from law enforcement. You've heard Joe Biden say himself, they've abandoned the men and women of the Border Patrol. They've abandoned the men and women of ICE. They abandoned the men and women of law enforcement. the progressive left hates law enforcement. We're at a place now under this administration where the good guys are all of a sudden the bad guys, and the bad guys are all of a sudden the victims. This administration has done a lot of damage to this country for our safety and of all our communities. So you need to call them and raise hell. Don't wait. Get out and vote for 2022. What I'm doing, I'm suing the hell out of them. I'm involved. I've already written 4 affidavits for the state of Texas. I'm in every one of those lawsuits as their expert witness. We've won the first 2, so we're 2-0. We're going to keep winning them. I filed an affidavit with the state of Florida and the state of Arizona. I'm going to sue the hell out of them. And because it's clear that they're not only ignoring the law, they're violating the law. Let me give you one example. Title 8, United States Code, says ICE shall detain illegal aliens convicted of drug offenses, crimes involving moral turpitude, and those with fine orders. ICE isn't detaining any of them right now. Zero. None of them. So not only are they ignoring the law, they're violating the law, and that's our latest lawsuit that we just filed. So, but people need to raise hell. And I'll say it. I'll say it again. I said it to the Texas congressmen. I'll say it to your listeners. It's time to stop being professional and polite. It's time to become street fighters and start raising hell. I'm not talking about going out committing violence or anything like that. I'm just talking about getting loud and hold your representatives accountable. And it just doesn't start with your governor and the president and your senator. You need to vote for your school board. You need to vote for the city council. You need to vote for your mayor, because this, if you look what's happening to our communities, and especially in the bigger cities, the city councils are turning against police. They're buying off on this BLM and all this Antifa crap. So we need to get involved in our communities. We need to get to the voter box for the local elections, the state elections, and the national elections. We got to fight back.
This is true. And I want to ask you a question about the genesis of this, because this disdain for law enforcement, it just didn't happen overnight. As a college student in the early 1970s and a person that was around, in high school and college during the Vietnam War, I remember there seemed to be a paradigm switch right then and there about where all of a sudden there seemed to be this total loss of authority of parents, police, all kind of authoritative figures. I remember people were calling the cops the pigs, and I didn't understand that. But where did you see this start going wrong as far as it involves law enforcement? Because it's not just ICE, but it's the police and these fools that want to defund the police and get rid of the police and everything. Where is the genesis of this, in your opinion?
I think the attacks on ICE began under President Trump, because Trump, he was endorsed by every law enforcement agency in the country, people that like them. And, the law enforcement supported the president because the president had their 6. The president has always had the back of law enforcement, and he wanted us to do our jobs. That's where hate started. If you hate Trump, you got to hate cops. But, let me tell you something. I've been in law enforcement 35 years. And now the tide has turned to say, cops are racist. There's systemic racism in law enforcement. That is a bunch of garbage. I've
Amen.
Been in law enforcement a long time. Are there racists in law enforcement? Sure. I'm sure there are, and I've met a few. But the vast majority of the men and women in law enforcement are doing it for the right job, right reasons. They don't get paid a lot of money. No one's getting rich being a cop. They put their lives on the line for this country every day to protect people who don't even like them, protect people that despise them, and many have died serving their nation and their communities. These are American patriots. They're the finest 1% this country has. And for Democrats and some of these progressive lefts to attack them, it's just a shame. Because these men and women are the best America has to offer. So this all started, again, for politics. ICE, you're bad people because you arrest illegal aliens. Well, ICE is enforcing the laws that Congress enacted. So last time I testified and one of the congressmen sitting there said I was a bigot and I was a racist, I was enforcing immigration law, I turned around and asked her, well, if I'm a racist for enforcing immigration law, what's that make you? You wrote it. We're not making this up. Police officers aren't making this up. They're enforcing the laws that were passed by legislation. So, people need to remember these men and women. When everybody else is running away from danger, these men and women are running toward it. These are our finest. And for the few bad apples like what happened, George Floyd,
mm-hmm.
No excuse for that. They need to be held accountable. They were held accountable for it. But a few bad cops don't make the whole institution bad. When those cops and firemen ran into the Twin Towers on 9/11, they weren't just saving white people; they were saving people. And I started as a cop in New York. I can tell you, 99% of the cops I met and worked with, they're there for the right reasons: to serve their communities, make their communities safer, make them better. So if you see a cop, thank them. Thank them for serving, because right now the attacks are on. They're having trouble recruiting officers. They're taking their protections away from them. Now cops can be sued for any reason whatsoever, and the city will no longer protect them in certain cities. They're defunding them. They're taking equipment away. And, you know, it's ridiculous what's going on. Hopefully, it's not a coincidence that crime rate is an all-time high right now. Crime's increasing all across the country in these Democratic-run cities, because when you got less cops equals more crime. It's simple math. Less cops on the street means more crime. Less money for cops means less training and less equipment. It means less overtime. Less cops means more crime. And so this is the result. What you're seeing in the crime wave right now across this country is because you're attacking the good guys, and it's going to and what's going to happen is crime's going to increase because the bad guys are paying attention.
Hey, look, people, go back and look at some of the Westerns. Go back and look at the Westerns from the 50s, from the 40s, from the 60s, some of the TV Western shows, because it was always the same thing. The hero, be it Wyatt Earp or whoever, the Lone Ranger, somebody, Destry, they had to ride in and clean up a town. Why? Because the town was run by the saloon keeper who had the mayor and the judge and the sheriff under his control, and the outlaws were just controlling things. This is what we're getting to here. Tom is telling you, we have to stop this while we still have time. Speaking of stopping things, I was sitting there at Rock the Red a couple of weeks just kicking back listening to you, or getting ready to listen to you, and I was not ready for you to pop that Senate hearing with you and AOC up there. I almost jumped out of my seat and started yelling, yeah, and then blowing your whole speech up. So I'm glad that Dave Bubeck was sitting there to keep me quiet, because that got me so fired up just watching you take her apart. Will you please, if you can, recall when you faced the Senate, that Senate hearing committee, and her ridiculous questions and how that whole thing transpired?
Well, as usual, Democrats, they want to hope they don't have a social separation. Family separation can't happen in the Trump administration. If it wasn't family separation, it's called zero tolerance. Law enforcement uses zero tolerance on prostitution. They use zero tolerance on drug sales. Zero tolerance is something law enforcement does to put a spike in fighting crime. So in a certain city, they'll say, okay, zero tolerance on prostitution. Arrest every gun, every prostitute out there to try to address this prostitution problem. They did for drugs, zero tolerance. Any drug sales will be arrested and put in front of the district attorney. So zero tolerance. We say, okay, entering the country illegally is a crime. 31% of women were being raped missing that dream. Children were dying. Cartels are missing millions. And while this was happening, 63,000 Americans died from opioid overdoses that came across that border because the border was so tied up, half the border was vulnerable. So the president recognized that this crisis, this what people call a humanitarian crisis, quickly became a national security crisis. You also realize if you want to blow something up in this country, if you want to be a terrorist coming to this country, you can't get a plane ticket anymore because all the database checks are being done now. You can't get a visa because of the visa security program. You're going to come across the border and have the border closed down on the line. The President Trump recognized that. And he says, we have a national security crisis. How do we stop the flow? How do we stop this abuse on the border? So one of the ideas was, well, let's start prosecuting. Is the crimes of this country legal? Let's start prosecuting them. So we prosecute the families. We prosecute the parent. And when you prosecute the parent, they get locked up, right? Well,
yeah.
Just like, you know, citizen families, which is law enforcement separates families every day. When a parent gets arrested, they separate that family. I've said during my testimony that day with AOC, when she said, well, you're separating families. I said, look, when I was a cop in New York and I stopped a father that was DUI and there's a child in the car, he went to jail, and the child either went to a relative or a CPS. I said, I separated families when I arrested a father for domestic violence. U.S. citizen families get separated every day when the parents charge of the crime. But they want a different set of rules for illegal aliens coming across the border. So we did zero tolerance. What they won't talk, which caused their family separation. But what they won't talk about is that in the first 5 days of zero tolerance, illegal immigration on borders dropped 30%. They would have stuck with it for 30 days, but we don't have the problem we have it right now. And I'll say this, for all the people that want to scream and yell about family separation, these are the same people that have no problem separating a baby from a mother's womb.
There you go.
It.
Amen.
They're fine with that. They're fine
amen.
With that. But what AOC was getting at, so, you know, of course, they always attack us on family separation. So she thought she had a Perry Mason moment where she, I found the memo that you signed about, you know, about zero tolerance. About family separation, I told her, it wasn't about family separation. It's about zero tolerance. It's about saving lives. It's about 31% women not being raped. It's about children not dying. That was a purpose for it. It was nothing racist about it. We're trying to secure our border and save lives. So, and that's why she, you know, the genius she is, which she's not. She's a moron, just so we're clear. She that's when she said, well, it's not illegal to enter the United States to claim asylum. No, it is. It's illegal. To enter the United States between imported rights. When you enter the states illegally, it's violation of Title 8 United States Code 1325. If you do it after your formally ordered removal, it's a felony. So I'll explain it to her. No, if you want to come and claim asylum, you don't break the law to claim asylum. You go to a port of entry,
right.
Present yourself to an immigration officer, and say, I want to claim asylum. And guess what happens when you do that? You're not paying a criminal cartel to smuggle you across the border. You're not being raped. You don't drown in a river. You don't die in a desert. You go to a port of entry and claim asylum in an air-conditioned building surrounded by federal officers who are going to take care of you. So my point with her is that she didn't understand the law, so I explained the law to her, and she got flustered because, you know, she doesn't know what she's talking about. She reads questions prepared by her staff. When she didn't get the answers she thought she was going to get, because I'm not taking anybody's crap, because, again, they work for me. And I know more about this issue than she'll ever know. I forgot more about this issue than she'll ever know. So, you know, her pointing a finger at me, raising a voice, doesn't bother me in a bit. Cause I know a hell of a lot more about it than she does, so I set her straight. As a matter of fact, the day after that testimony, I was actually back in the yard smoking a brisket, and I got a call from the President of the United States, Donald Trump. Says, hey, I saw your that testimony yesterday. He goes, it was great setting her straight because she didn't look very smart. And I told him, I said, well, it wasn't a big challenge because she's not
challenge.
Smart. Every time she opens her mouth about immigration, she's wrong. She's the least smart congresswoman in the history of Congress. And so, you know, and I've taken Washington Schultz on. I'll take them all on. You know, if you want to call me to the hill to claim that I'm a racist and that the men and women of ICE are terrible, the men and women of the Border Patrol are terrible, when I know for a fact these men and women are patriots to serve their nation, they died serving their nation. If you want to come and start vilifying the men and women who protect you while you're sleeping in your bed, game on. Call me up and we'll go at it.
You know, I looked at that and I was like, wow. Now that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Do you see us winning this, or is it going to have to take something, you know, a hammer from God or something? Can we turn this around on our own? Because it just looks like we're losing at so many fronts. And you said we got to get out and we have to make a noise and stand up for ourselves. But there's so many people that aren't used to doing that. It's kind of out of their comfort zone. You do it. I'm learning how to do this.
Well,
but there's so many people. You know what I mean?
Well, most of us, it's hard to get out and protest and raise hell because you got a job. You're not living in your parents' basement waiting for your next stimulus check. So, you know, it's hard for those who have jobs and are trying to support a family doing things the right way. But, you know what? It's time to make the time to start. You got to start caring because, look, we're losing the America I grew up in, you know, where people are now afraid to fly American flag because someone may, you know, attack their home. I mean, look, we need to stand up. You know, I don't expect somebody to beat me and get out there raising hell. Look, my wife said the other day, you know, half the country hates you. I said, I'm okay with that because they're wrong. If they saw what I saw in my 35-year career, if they talked to 9-year-old girls that were raped 20 times making that dream, 9-year-old, if they carried the dead bodies I carried, if they've seen the people suffer that I've seen suffer, they'd have the same attitude I have. And that's why I get so upset, whether I'm on Fox News or I'm in front of Congress. You know, you can fix this. President Trump was on the way to give us a secure border the first time in my lifetime. He gave us the most secure border we've ever had. If he would have got a few more things done, if he would have got reelected, we could have had a secure border. And it's just not about securing the border. It's about saving lives. And that's why I get upset, because these progressives and these Democrats, if they saw what I saw in my career, the number of dead bodies, the number of people that were attacked and raped and mutilated, if they see what I've seen on that southern border, they'd be bad too. So, and that's why the listeners are going to be Tom Homan. They haven't seen what I've seen, and they probably don't get to the fever pitch I get. But look, we're losing our country. All you got to do is look at the videotape, what's going on that border. We don't know who's coming across. And it's just not who the Border Patrol is processing and releasing. There's 1,000 to 1,500 of gotaways. Border Patrol's not arresting because they're so tied to the family units. They look at the drone traffic, the camera traffic, the sensor traffic. 1,000 to 1,500 a day are getting by into the United States. Who the hell are they? Now, they raised, you know, people had a concern that, you know, three or four people with Border Patrol arrested that were on the FBI terror watch list. My question is this. How many didn't they catch?
Right.
Because they're not going to turn themselves over to Border Patrol like family units and children. They're not going to make it easy. They're going to wait until the cartel sends 200 family groups over and tie all the Border Patrol resources up. And they're going to go through an unprotected part of the border. God help us.
I hear you.
The price for this in a few years.
By the way, you got to understand, when we did
a pilot program with President Trump, we checked these families. We did DNA testing. Up to 30% of families weren't even families. The children being trafficked. And they're releasing people so quickly right now, not doing the criminal checks or the background checks and DNA testing. We're going to find out real soon that some of these children were trafficked by child predators, sex predators, released to people who have no good intention for these children. Because they're in such a hurry to release them so quickly to give the optics that there's not a crisis, they put these children in grave danger, and they want to badmouth the Trump administration. What they're doing is 1,000 times worse, and it's going to come back to bite us all in the butt soon.
I hear you, Tom. You know, maybe that's why Kamala Harris doesn't want to go down at the border, because if she saw what you saw, she'd be accountable. Let me tell you something. Half the country may hate you, but I don't. In fact, if I have to go to a fight in a phone booth, in an alley, or in a foxhole, I want you there with me. Hey, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. You're welcome to come on the show anytime.
Half the country that hates me, they put fire in my soul to race out. But if they knew what I knew, they wouldn't hate me. They'd understand me. And that's what they need to research this issue. Illegal immigration is not a victimless crime. And if people understood what I understood, they'd agree with me.
Tom, I agree partially, but I'm going to tell you, unfortunately, there's an ideology. You know what Marxism, socialism, communism, fascism is. There's people that it's about the revolution. They don't give a damn about you or me or what we think. It's about winning this war. And that's what's dangerous. We got the useful idiots. Those people would care.
No, they just don't know what's going on. I agree with you. I'm never going to win everybody over. But some of those people hate me now would understand if they saw what I saw and know what I know and see the intelligence report that I read. If they knew what I knew, that's the reason I'm out there raising now. I'm trying to educate them. If they knew what I knew, saw what I saw, I'd have a lot more people on my side rather than just half of them. But you're right. There's a population out there that want to destroy this nation and what we stand for. We can't convince them otherwise.
Right, but we got to keep up the fight because there are people we can get, and it's people that listen to the show. My motto is just get one, flip blue to red, one vote. If each one of us, 63 million people, flipped one vote, just look what this country would look like. Tom, tell people how they can reach you if they can, and if there's anything that you would like to promote.
No, you can go. I got a couple websites. I got TomHomanSpeaks.com. You can go there, and I do a newsletter. That's where you can buy my book that I wrote called Defend the Border, Save Lives, TomHomanSpeaks.com. And also, I'm doing a lot of consulting, and they can go to HomelandStrategic.com, and that's my consulting website. I do a lot of consulting with, as a matter of fact, I'm working very close to the state of Texas right on the border wall. So either place, you can contact me. And again, I hope you're I appreciate what you're doing. We need shows like yours to help educate the American people. So I really do appreciate what you do every day.
Thank you for the kind comments, and we appreciate what you do. We need more dudes like you. Thank you for you're always welcome to come on the show. Thank you very much.
Talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye. Mr. Thomas Homan. Now, that's a man's man, and he's talking the real deal. And it's really interesting because he just segued into something we're about to get into now without even necessarily knowing what he did, but he did. So, people, I just want you to imagine something. Just imagine if you may not know what country you emanated from. Just imagine if you weren't really sure where you came from. Just imagine if you were a child and you suddenly found yourself the victim of child sex trafficking. Just imagine if you're used as a sex doll by your captors and abusers for 15 years before you successfully executed a miraculous escape. I'm not a crier, but boy, this is rough. Eliana Brooks didn't just imagine this, people. She lived it. Now Eliana specializes in rehabilitation of child sex trafficking victims under the age of 12. Under the age of 12. And this is what Tom Holman was talking about. Releasing all these kids into the United States without checking and stuff, they could be being turned and released right to child predators, or the coyotes, the people bringing them in, could be selling them right straight into the child sex slave market. She's also an expert in childhood sexual exploitation and exploitation and satanic ritual abuse. A founding board member of Warrior Brides Ministries, whose vision is to build an inclusive community, we need that, that is trained to love and walk with child sex trafficking victims through their rehabilitation, because boy, this is rough. Along with Warrior Brides Ministries founder Kelly Hawkley, Eliana is co-writing her second book entitled The Will, Redeeming the Satanic Soldier. I spent some time with her down at Rock the Red, and boy, did she just have us riveted in tears listening to her story. But thank God she's alive, has come out the other end, and can hopefully help others to either get through what she went through or to hopefully avoid it. I bring to the show Eliana Brooks, and I know there's a whole bunch of people just waiting to hear what you have to say. Hello, Eliana.
Hi, Gary. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. I was sitting there with Dave and Sherry Brubeck listening to you, and boy, I was looking at all the faces, and it was so difficult because everybody wanted to hear what you had to say. But boy, you talk about the fall of mankind. What a terrible, oh gosh. So let's get at it. Tell them your testimony, my dear, and praise God that he brought you through it.
Yes, and all glory has to go to God, because, you know, a lot of times we want to hear about what people went through and how they escaped, but when the Lord really shows up is during the healing process. So, like you said, Gary, I was brought here across our unprotected southern borders with my twin sister and my baby brother, and unfortunately no one kept me in a cage, because I would have rather spent the first 15, 17 years of my life in a cage than most of the places that I ended up or the experiences that I had, because no one checked to make sure that who was bringing me here was really related to me, or that they were bringing me here for the right reasons. And because of that, I spent 15 years as a commodity in the United States, bought and sold by men and women for whatever they wanted at that time. And
how old did this start?
I was just before three, maybe three. I was relatively young. My little brother wasn't quite three yet. And, you know, we lived a pretty terrible life with eight other kids that I thought were related to me, but found out that they weren't. We lived in a basement. In probably the worst conditions that you can imagine. You know, I can remember my baby brother picking me up just to drink out of a leaky pipe, because we hadn't eaten or drank in forever. And of those kids, I'm the only one that's left. So I'm the only one left to tell our story. And I don't often tell my story for no reason, because I don't see a point in rehashing terrible things that happened. But thanks to our current administration, people need to understand that the commodification of children for organ harvesting and sex trafficking is very real. And right here in the United States, it's not something that is removed from you. It's not something that you have to visit a third-world country to experience. It happens right here under your nose every day, and the left liberals want to convince us that it is some gigantic conspiracy theory, but it's not. You can't tell me that the life that I lived is a conspiracy. I lived every day of it, one time physically and over again in my mind until I perceived healing. So this idea that it's a conspiracy is really a giant cover-up so that people don't understand what is actually happening. you know, the average American doesn't understand commodities and commodity manipulation, but what Joe Biden is doing is commodity manipulation. Like Thomas just talked about, the open borders is really for the supply and demand of child sex trafficking victims, amongst other things. And that's why it was so important for him to reopen borders so quickly, because with our previous administration and all of their efforts to rescue children, the supply of kids had gotten so low that they had to open borders for them to have more victims. And that's why I'm 32 years old. That's why now people need to understand that what I live through happens every day, and it's still happening every day, that kids live every day with a price tag on their body that they didn't put there, that someone else put there. And the things that you hear about, kids being bought and sold at auctions and bid on by the highest bidders, I experienced every day of my life. I'll give you an example. I remember one bidder, his name was Pat. And a lot of people think that these people who are buying children are someone special, but Pat was a regular, ordinary person. He was the father of five children, a loving husband. He worked every single day. And once every couple months, he sent his wife and kids away on a beautiful vacation to Cancun and went and bought kids to have sex with and took them to their house. I can still picture his house in the Pocono Mountains in Pennsylvania. He had a huge house and a pool, and I was allowed to play in his daughter's room and do all sorts of things just like his kid until nighttime came. So these people that are buying and selling kids are not removed from you. Like, we get this idea that there's monsters under the bed, but in actuality, they're everyday people that you could possibly be interacting with and have no idea.
Yeah, this is so terrifying. Eliana, if it reaches any point in which, you know, you just want to stop on a certain topic, just let me know, because, you know, your boundaries I will most definitely honor. Please explain to people the fact that you are here is a blessing, because one of the ways out is suicide, and I know you contemplated that several times, right?
Yeah, I attempted suicide the first time. I was a preteen, and I convinced my little brother to do it with me, and we both hung ourselves from that same leaky pipe that I drank out of. And then the pipe broke, and we both got an ass beating. I probably can't say that on radio.
Yeah, you can say it. This is internet. You can say that. Yeah.
Okay. And then we went on to attempt suicide probably three other times, failed attempts, until we both made a promise to each other that if one of us committed suicide, that the other one would follow. And 7 years ago, my little brother committed suicide. So...
Oh,
and I'm still here because I did attempt it when he did, because I had made a promise to him, but it was unsuccessful. I split both of my wrists and then swallowed the razor and narrowly escaped a colostomy bag for the rest of my life. I'm still here despite all odds at this point.
Praise God. You know, let me ask you, 15 years, tell them how you got away. This is the stuff movies are made of.
I ran. It wasn't even anything that spectacular. And this is not something that I talk about a lot, but sometimes I regret running, you know. I was at the hospital and in a really unique situation where people were keeping me from my abusers for the first time ever. And the doctor said something like, go ahead and change and I'll be back. And I seized that opportunity to run. And this wasn't part of my speech at Rapid Red, but I did run, and I never looked back. But one of the hardest parts with that was the fact that I left my brother behind, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, I didn't think about that in the moment, but how much did he endure that I could have potentially saved him from? And maybe he'd still be here, you know? But
yeah.
I left him.
And you ran without shoes, right? Or didn't you end up with bloody feet or something?
Yeah, I ran barefoot in a cold northeastern November. Yeah, I can still remember running and looking down at the sidewalk and watching blood drip off of me and just running and running and running. But not everyone gets out, you know. The average lifespan of a child sex trafficking victim is 12 years. Most of them are sold into sex trafficking between 3 and 5 and either are murdered, overdose, commit suicide, or run between the age of 15 and 17. So an average of 12 years. And not too many people get the opportunity to run. Most of them are killed because they're no longer useful or die accidentally or overdose or a myriad of other things or successfully attempt suicide or are killed by one of their abusers in some violent sex act.
Well, can you tell us how from running to where you are today, how did you make that transition from you're running and you don't know where you're running to? You know what you're running from, but you don't know what it's going to lead to. Look at where you are now, a founding member, a board member of Warrior Brides Ministries. You speak around the country, and you're helping kids to counsel and heal over what you went through because you need a testimony, and boy, do you have one.
So, you know, that's the part that I get frustrated with because, yes, we're always super happy when someone is rescued. You know, kids get rescued, and that's great. But who's there to walk with them through the healing process? And no one was there for me. That first day that I ran, I slept on a park bench in a park, and then I ended up in a homeless camp. And I made a myriad of bad choices between then and where I am now, you know? And that healing process is really ugly. For a long time, I didn't have good relationships or anything because I didn't know how to trust people. I didn't know how to function in society. I didn't know how to do basic things. I learned how to read at almost 18 years old. You know, I didn't know how to – I remember being 24 years old when someone told me that when you take a shower, you're supposed to wash your feet. Basic things that most people learn, I was never taught. So from the time I left till about 5 years ago, there was a whole bunch of really poor choices in my life, really bad decisions, a lot of mental health hospitalizations. You know, I was just completely out of my mind because I didn't know how to function in this world. You know, because I didn't live in this world. The only life I knew was captivity, and mentally I was still in a prison. And then about 4 years ago, I met my mom, who's the founder of Warrior Bride Ministry, and I started this healing journey. And healing sucks. Like, I'm not going to tell anyone that healing is easy. Everyone should do it, but a lot of times we discount the basic things that you have to learn. Like my mom's husband, my dad, people don't know how hard it was for me to like even be in the same house with him. And I actually just cooked him Father's Day dinner because he wasn't home yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to get to that point to eat dinner with him, I wouldn't have been able to do 5 years ago, you know. But healing, thanks to Warrior Bride Ministries, I've been able to walk out that healing and wholeness that's only found in Jesus, you know. And it's a process. And now I sit as the program director, and I design programs and treatment plans for our clients that are a lot based off of my own healing journey, and a lot of our treatment modalities and things like that come from that journey as well as our book. And I just praise God every day that I am not who I used to be. I've only been a Christian for 4 years, you know, and everything I tried before that didn't work, but he seemed to stick. And I give him all the glory that I can now see kids and be like, I get it. You know, I was you, and there's something on the other side that's so much better than what you ever knew, you know.
Amen. And heaven's going to be even better, you know. So you got to understand. Amen. Please understand, you are a new creation. See, once you accepted Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, everything that you were, that person's dead and buried. And that's the thing. See, God will give you newness of life. And obviously there's scars, but those scars, you're a new creation, and that whole past, hopefully you'll be able to put it behind you as best you can, and the Lord will continue to walk with you. I'm sure you know this was meant to be. You were going to be a child of God, and that's why that pipe broke. That's why you couldn't commit suicide. It just God just had his loving hands around you, and you know it was a, you know, I don't know if you understand predestination, but it and I'm talking about a predestination of choices that people make that they don't even know they made, but you know, mm-hmm. this was meant to be as far as you surviving this and having a testimony, because we all have a testimony of how we pass from darkness to light. Please tell the people why, in your opinion, the Democrats, the media, and the quote-unquote people on the left, it seems to be, they could do something about this, want no part of exposing this.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I actually asked the other night, when did the illegal sale of children for sex and organ harvesting and labor become a partisan issue? It should not be a partisan issue. It should not be a Democrat versus Republican issue. The only thing I can think of is the fact that they're protecting their own people, because why wouldn't you want to save our children? Why wouldn't you want to put an end to absolute torture? I made a very public post probably 2 days ago on Facebook, and I said, you know, I have a whole line of conservative Republican radios and podcasts to speak on, and not one Democratic invitation. I'm very conservative in my beliefs. I'm very right-leaning. But if a Democrat invited me to speak at something, I would go.
Yeah.
So I invited all of my friends to contact their leaders and say, hey, you know, she'll come and educate you. And so far, no bites. Mm-hmm. I don't expect any, but Warrior Bride Ministries is not a Republican organization.
Right, I understand. I understand.
We are a ministry dedicated to child sex trafficking. And if the Democratic Party would like to hear what we have to say, then that would be fantastic. But the problem is, when you know, then you have an obligation to do something about it. And I don't think they want to know, or they're trying to protect someone. But the difference is, I'm not going to be quiet just to keep them comfortable. I'll talk loud enough for them all to hear, whether they invite me.
I hear you. Tell people about Warrior Brides Ministry. Tell them what it is and what it does. Thank you.
So we are a ministry located in Marietta, Georgia. We focus on healing, deliverance, and integration of those who have suffered from severe trauma, including childhood sexual exploitation, satanic ritual abuse, and we offer biblical restoration for the effects of that, such as PTSD, complex PTSD, depression, anxiety. But my biggest part at Warrior Bride Ministries and our focus is, we are building a all-inclusive survivor community in North Georgia that is dedicated to the healing of child sex trafficking victims under the age of 12. Because the problem is, when kids are rescued, there's no continuity of care. We see it all the time in our office. There's no continuity of care. Kids are bounced from foster home to foster home because they don't know how to meet their needs. They end up back in trafficking. They face re-exploitation at school. So we're building an all-inclusive community to house and feed and educate these children. We're not just building a community, though. We're building forever homes and forever families, moms and dads who are going to adopt these children so we can limit government involvement and raise them like their own and they'll always have a place to come back to. I'm very fortunate to have my mom and dad, and know I have a place to go on the holidays and a place to call home, and that was integral in my healing. And we want each of those kids to know that they have a family that they that loves them, the family that they always deserved, because every child deserves a family and every child deserves freedom.
This is true. I have to ask you this personal question, because I noticed it at Rock the Red, and I know how I felt. How do you feel about getting hugged? Because you do know everybody that meets you or hears you automatically, we just want, I couldn't wait to hug you just to let you know you're loved. I assume you get a lot of hugs.
So it's funny, because when I met my mom on a healing weekend, and one of the nicest women there, beautiful person, came up to me and hugged me, and I punched her. So 5 years ago, I didn't like being hugged. It's probably not my favorite thing now, but I'm fortunate that people are at least trauma-informed enough to ask me for a hug. But I'm definitely getting used to the amount of touch that people give me. And also working in ministry, everybody wants to be hugged and held. So I'm getting used to it, but totally not my favorite thing. But I have to realize that each person that I encounter is hearing this story for the very first time, having their own emotional response to it, and that hug is not so much for me as it is for them.
You know, Eliana, you didn't lay me out, but I don't remember if I asked you first. I probably hugged you 5 times in 3 days.
It's okay.
What about that? You just put up with me like, look, I want to knock this guy out, but I can't.
Well,
stop hugging me.
That is the difference between that Eliana and this Eliana. It's Jesus, and I don't punch people anymore. So.
Okay. Well, did you want to punch me?
Well, maybe a little bit, but
okay.
I was also very tired.
I'll love that. Good, because, boy, that's... No, but I've heard that story before. There was a story that a person told. She's a believer now. She was rescued, I think, from Korea, China, and a rich guy. She was the over in the corner, the rattiest of all the people, all the kids in this place. And he said he wanted her, and he went over to shake her hand. She spit in his face because she just didn't know how to return love. So it's a process, and boy, thanks for coming on. You're always welcome to come on the show, and boy, what a story. And people need to understand this is going on. It could be going on in your community, and it probably is. Please tell people how they can reach you and how they can get in touch with Warrior Bride Ministries and get involved.
So you can go to warriorbrideministries.com. We actually have a online volunteer training tomorrow evening, if you're available, so you can figure out different ways that you can get plugged in. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram, Warrior Bride Ministries, and you can email me directly, Eliana, E-L-I-A-N-A, at warriorbrideministries.com.
Thank you. Eliana, tell your mom, it was a pleasure meeting her. Tell her God bless you, your father, your family, and we'll be praying for you. And as I said, you're always welcome to come back to the show.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Eliana Brooks, that's tough stuff, people. She, you know, everybody, all the other 8 kids with her, 7 or 8 kids, including her natural brother, they did not make it out. This is going on. And if you listen to Thomas Holman, everybody, when people are coming across the border, these kids are coming across with no family, most of them. And they are going to, if not be at the mercy of these coyotes who could sell them to somebody or sell them into the sex industry, or they're coming across to be brought by people to be sex slaves. We're talking about 3 to 5 year olds, everybody. Then just think about your son and daughter at the age of 3 to 5. This is terrible stuff, people, terrible stuff. So I thank Eliana. Please keep her in your prayers. All right. This is going to be fun because I've been waiting for this, and I'll tell you why in a hot minute. But Betsy is the first thing you'll most likely notice when you meet Eric Cochran. A little bit more about that later. The second thing you'll notice about Eric is the accent. He's a native of, I'm not sure if I can say this right, but Tipperary, Ireland. His family immigrated to California when he was 8. Spring of 2016, Eric became a United States citizen, which he called then and still calls now the proudest moment of his life. Talking about quickly moving up the ranks, Eric has already, as a young man, served on 3 national campaigns, and he has worked on Capitol Hill. He'll explain that to us. He has been the faith director for a prominent presidential campaign. He's the leader of a South Carolina citizens organization called SC We the People. He's the founder and president of Businesses for Liberty, which is committed to advertising for businesses that are pro-life, America first, and stand for individual liberty. I love that. What I love about Eric is his non-wavering dedication, I really mean this, to his Christian faith, freedom, and liberty. And the fact that almost everywhere he goes, Betsy is right at his side, right there, looking good, held in his loving arms. I welcome to the broadcast Mr. Eric Cochran. You there,
Eric? Mr. Benford, it's great to be here.
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
and
sir.
I heard Betsy's not there. You got people are going, who is Betsy? Please tell people who Betsy is.
Proud to talk about the Betsy Ross flag. You know, there wouldn't be a modern-day flag with 50 stars if there hadn't been the 13 colonies, the original colonies that fought against King George and tyranny back then. And I like to say if the spirit of the colonies was in our country today, how different would America be today? So one of those stars, South Carolina, and I'm very proud to talk about that.
Right, and Eric walked around for 3 or 4 days at Rock the Red with Betsy at his side. It's a full-size flag. And you take Betsy pretty much a lot of places? Or is it just, it was just
I've taken her to many monuments.
I take her
to many monuments. I've taken her to many political events, and I'm proud of it.
And I was proud to see it, and I was proud to pose with you and Betsy, and pose with you, and get to meet you and talk to you, Eric. The one thing I meant what I said. Your love of Christ, your love of pro-life, your love of America first, your love of country. This it just oozes out of you as a young man, and I'm just so proud and so glad when I was down at Rock the Red to see this coming from you, and it just shows how times have fallen around here, because you came from Ireland and you have this love of country that I don't see in too many Americans. Can you explain why you feel this way?
You know, growing up in Ireland, everyone's seen, you know, Celtic women and many of the beautiful shows of why Ireland is so green. But there was another side to Ireland, and that was people who were killing each other in Northern Ireland during the trouble years. And my father, when he, you know, we had been persecuted because we left the church, the Catholic Church, and many things were going on. But I can tell you that when he looked into my brother's eyes and said, boys, we're going to a land of freedom. We're going to America, a place where we don't have to choose a side, Protestant or Catholic, or be fearful of driving up to a place called Northern Ireland. But we can serve Jesus as we see fit. And can I tell you, America is better than anything I could have ever hoped or dreamed.
Yes, at least it used to be, but all of a sudden America's starting to get like Ireland. This must be really shocking you.
It is. But, you know, I still believe that there are so many who gathered with me at the monument who have taken a stand as business owners saying they're pro-life, they're pro-liberty, and America first, and it gives me a lot of hope for the country.
Well, same here, but tell people, like, what you see now. How many years have you been here? And tell them the America that you arrived at, and tell them the America that you're starting to see or you've seen over the last, you know, decade or so, with this rise of a socialism, communism, Marxism type thing that, you know, is actually something that we thought we'd never see really, really take hold in this nation.
You know, when we first came to America, reenactments were something that were celebrated. I remember in homeschooling reading about George Washington and Paul Revere and even Robert E. Lee and, you know, learning the different Ulysses S. Grant, all these people across the realm. And it was exciting to learn about American history, all sides of it, the good, the bad, and the ugly make us who we are. And today you can't even fly into John Wayne Airport or people call him racist. You can't go to reenactments or historical landmarks, or they all need to be put away. America as we know it is being changed by socialism, and it's going to take every single one of us to keep our republic.
Do you think we understand what this is really, really about? Because, see, it's been – they've been moving that football, so to speak, a yard a year, but we've never really been a socialist nation. It hasn't been like even – I wouldn't say Ireland, but countries like you hear and you know what's going on in Europe and other areas, and you see, you know about China and what's going on. We've always been like America first and always kind of the big fish. So it's kind of like – Americans seem to not take this as seriously as they should. Have you found that in your travels?
I have found that younger people are a little bit asleep at the wheel. Now, some are waking up, thank God, and I think that was shown by how we were treated at the monuments. But I do think there is a moment of reckoning for the country. I'm a millennial. I'm 31 years old, and I'm praying more millennials will realize the more socialism comes into play, the less money you're going to have in your pocket because of taxes. And when people work hard and they live the American dream, they don't want that taken away from them.
Yeah. Well, they shouldn't want it taken away. But I'm so concerned, Eric, that there's an ideology going on. In other words, there's an ideology of – there's a saying back in the day of the Marxist leaders that it's never about the issues, it's always about the revolution, that this is about getting rid of that constitution because that's the only thing that stands between them and us and a socialist dream. And the problem, it just seems that there's just so many people willing to give away their freedom, give away their liberties for this socialist utopia that they think will level the playing field, which it will not, but they think it will. And this is my fear. This is what we seem to be fighting. And how would you tell people how we, as American citizens that really think about God, family, country, and Constitution, need to fight this battle to win it?
I like to say, when the country is the darkest, patriots can shine the brightest. Every single one of us, no matter how old you are and you're listening to this right now or you're watching it, no matter how old you are, you have a role to play. You have been born for such a time as this, whether it's in your business, in your school, in your church, to stand for pro-liberty, to stand for, you know, being pro-life. Be proud of it. We all came out of the womb at some point. You know, be proud to stand for America first. What does that mean to me? It means American workers, American products, and American buyers. We can all do our part to build our own economy and to also stand up against the wokers for those who are genuinely patriots today.
And that's really, really – you put that really, really well. Where did you get this from? Okay, you're a millennial. You're a millennial from another country. You sound more American than most Americans. How did you find the light? How did you find the truth? How did you find this avenue? And you're staying in this lane, bro. How did you find that where so many others can't find this?
That's a really great question, Gary, and I'm proud to say your name because my younger brother's name is Gary. I'll tell you,
thank
Gary,
you.
It comes from reading real history and having parents that love me enough to tell me the truth. It came from great role models, you know, in reading of American history. It came from falling in love, Gary, with this country in every way, including warts and all. Because you know what? Like our memories, we have good memories and we have bad memories. But it all makes us who we are today, and everything's about perspective. If you think a piece of granite, a monument, is holding you back in your life, then you need to really take a good, long, hard look at your choices, and why would you make an inanimate object the reason why you're not being successful in life?
This is absolutely true. Eric, tell people about the moment, that day, which I know you'll never forget, that you became a United States citizen. And what was the process for you leading up to it?
Oh, boy, we might need to do a whole segment on this. So it took me many years, people don't realize, from religious visa to applying for a green card to getting fingerprinted, to waiting to be in line to take the test, to taking the test, to being sworn in. You know, when I finally, got to be sworn in 2016, I had to drive. I was working on the Ted Cruz campaign at the time. All the while not being able to vote, I drove 16 hours from Missouri to Charleston, South Carolina. And when I got to raise my hand in the air only with like 2 hours of sleep, I just, Gary, I said, I made it. I made it. It was one of the most emotional days because I had done it the right way and I was an American.
Amen to that. Eric, what do you have to say to people after all, excuse me, all you went through to get to that process, to people that just seem willing to just throw it away and want to trash the flag, trash the country, instead of America first and our Constitution, which gives us freedom and liberty that no other nation has ever had, wanting to just throw it away for world globalism?
Think of when Jesus said on the cross, forgive them for they know not what they do. It's very easy. I tell people we don't need to just stand for what's right. We need to stand the right way for what's right. When I was being insulted at the monument for standing, you know, behind John C. Calhoun and some of these others, I just remember thinking, stand with honor, dignity, and respect. How would the founding fathers, would they be yelling across the street? Would they be hurling insult for insult? No. No, they wouldn't. They would stand in a way to where any person watching from a third-party observer would say, that's an honorable man. That's an honorable woman. And even if they hated you, they'd have to respect you.
I hear you. I absolutely hear you. And I heard you. Heard you rock it at Rock the Red. Tell the people what your presentation was about, because it was very riveting and very patriotic, and I wanted to yell and scream, but you just can't do that in there.
Well, I appreciate
I wanted to go, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. You can't do that. I'm supposed to be a mature. I'm a radio host. You can't do that in there.
I would have loved it, but, you know.
Yeah, Donna Fiducian, Don Mailer, Presley may have had a heart attack, you know. Dude, tell them about your presentation, what you spoke of. Do you remember?
Well, I talked about a couple of things. I talked about the importance of legal immigration. You know, illegal immigrants hurt legal immigration the most. The reason it took me so long is because they were so behind on the paperwork. And that we've got to defend that real immigration. The voter ID laws and all the stuff they're trying to say is racist is actually validating what I went through, which is years of immigration to be able to present my ID and say I can vote. And it's a slap in the face to every immigrant to say that's racist, because those are the people who have waited in the long lines to finally get to vote. I talked about building our own economy, that we've got to have businesses that are pro-life, pro-liberty, and America first. And that we have 91 businesses now, Gary, 91 businesses that have joined this movement. And people know when they go to businessesforliberty.com, they can go to our map and find all of our businesses that believe as they do.
Yes, and I'm glad you said that, because you've just segued into my next question. I was going to ask you, please tell people why you founded Businesses for Liberty and what it's about and what's the focus and the goal and the end game.
So I saw what happened in this session. I don't care what anybody says. We all know what happened. And I said to myself, what can we do productively to fight back? What can we do to take our country back one person at a time, one city at a time? And I thought, build our own economy. And I thought about Trump. Donald J. Trump at the age of 29, mocked by a lot of people. He's just Fred Trump's son. He can't do anything. He's just going to be in the family business. But no, he expanded into Manhattan. He expanded into the old Commodore Hotel, which became what? Trump Tower.
Tower.
And a lot of people didn't think he could do it. And look at him today. And I thought, you know what? I'm 31. I'm 2 years older than he was then. And I want to build a movement of businesses that are going to take our country back, because it's time to stop shopping for tyranny while we say we're standing for liberty.
Right. Now, since you brought that up, a lot of people hear America first, America first. They want to make it sound like it's racist. It's not racist. It's just basically what everybody does. Take care of your family before you try and take care of somebody else's family. You don't see somebody, your parents,
right,
parents aren't out there trying to raise somebody else's kids in another city or another country. You take care of your family first, and then you can maybe think about taking care of somebody else. So America First should not be a novel idea. Why do you think it gets such pushback?
You know, I really can't understand why. America First means, think about how diverse America is. You've got Irish and African-American, you've got Hispanic, you've got people from all over the world who are trying to get in here because it's such a great country. They wouldn't be trying to get in if it wasn't such a great country, let me tell you. If there wasn't the American dream, they would not be all trying to get in. But I think it's just the brainwashing and education to make people ashamed of their own country. America, if I lived in Mexico, I would say Mexico first. If I lived in Ireland, I'd say Ireland first. There's nothing racist about it whatsoever.
Absolutely. You're right about that. And we know this because we know good and well China takes care of China first. India takes care of India first. North Korea takes care of North Korea first. Russia takes care. Iran, they take care of their own first and try and capture the rest of everything else except for India. But the point I'm trying to make is this is not a novel idea, but they just want to use it to try and, again, topple our Constitution, because that's what it's always about. It always comes back to the Founding Fathers and the Constitution. I can't blame you for this, Eric, you know, because obviously you're a millennial that gets it. But tell me, when you talk to millennials, do you have any success with them? And a lot of us have so much trouble trying to get them to see a conservative constitutional point of view. How do you deal with people in your age bracket?
You know, I think a lot of people don't realize if you're willing to not be angry while you're standing for truth, people, there is an opportunity to speak into the lives of people who can be persuaded. The other thing I will say is this, I was a Democrat. I'm about to shock some of the people listening to this. I was a Democrat back in 2007. And
you just shocked
I can remember
me.
Being duped. I see a lot of younger people. I can remember being duped thinking government could end poverty and we could. I was now, in my defense, I call myself an evangelical Democrat. But you know what happened? There was no place for me in the Democratic Party, none whatsoever. But I tried to fight within it. I tried to stand. I was never for abortion. I was always pro-life. But I began to see that the entire system was to keep people in bondage, keep them in the welfare system, and make sure they never got successful because they were always going to rely on government.
Why could you see it, but so many – and then again, as you say, look, they're in high school. They're learning it wrong. They're being taught these Marxist institutions. Then they go pay $70,000 a year to go to college, and the same thing happens. So, but you found your way out. Why can't they? Why could you see the light, but many, many, many of – people in their early 30s can't.
You know, I think you're getting to some really good questions here because I think a lot of it has to do with your raising, right? So, I was homeschooled, and even if I had wandered off the path even a little bit, I always had those principles. You know, it says in Proverbs, train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he shall not depart. And I think many kids have had bad upraisings. They never really had a father. Let's be honest. They never really had a family that supported them. They never really had that foundation. And that's why it's so important that parents take the time to help their children fall in love with learning, whatever it might be, sciences, history, math, but really take an active part in your son's or grandson's learning.
There you go. Hey, Eric, I'm going to drop a dime on you because people, I ran into Eric at Rock the Red from Thursday to Saturday. I probably ran into him 10 times. I had already told him. I hadn't given him the date, but I said, I want you on the show. And every time I saw Eric, he was like, I can't wait to come on the show. And he had his big smile on his face, so I couldn't wait to get you on. Eric, you've been wonderful. Please tell people how they can reach you and anything you want to promote about your organization.
I would just say this to you. I want you all to hear this very clearly. No matter what has gone on in your life, no matter how much money you have in your pocket or how small your town is, you matter. All patriots matter in this country. And this country is looking to you to take a stand in your school, in your business, in your church, and say, here am I, send me, Lord. You know, the founding fathers were ordinary people who stepped up during extraordinary times. And we need you involved in this fight. We are trying to build our own economy, businessesforliberty.com, or you can go on Facebook, businessesforliberty-national. But we all have a part. Gary, you're doing such a great job. You're a patriot, and people need to learn from you and do what you're doing. So I'm just so glad to have been here tonight.
Well, thank you very much for that compliment. Do you want to tell people how they can reach you or your organizations or get involved?
Yeah, if you want to go to businessesforliberty.com, or you can even, you know, I'm going to put this out there. You can call me 843-754-5630 or email us at businessesforliberty@protonmail.com.
Eric, thank you for coming on. I was waiting for this because I knew you would bring the heat because you just have a love for this country and you get it. I'm glad to call you my brother in Christ. God bless you and everything you do, and you're always welcome to come back on the show.
Proud to know you, Gary. You are a great patriot. Thank you, sir.
Same to you. Mr. Eric Carker and everybody, see, that's what I'm talking about. Eric gets it, and it just shows everybody you can get it. You can get it, because if he can get it and he's 31 years old and he came from another country, you can get it right here. And it doesn't matter what you've been through. Look at the sign of the times. Learn to read the sign of the times. Look at where we are in this country right now and look at what the fight is about. And speaking about getting it, Michelle Terrace gets it. The founder of Jexit, which is the Jewish exit movement, Jexit has been, at least that I know for several years, been just rock solid trying to help steer, in particular Jews, but anybody away from the Democratic Party. And Michelle founded this, and she's an accomplished executive in both the corporate and nonprofit worlds. She saw a need in the community to educate Jews on the drastic and alarming changes happening within the Democratic Party. People, it's not the party of Kennedy. It's not the party of Harry Truman. That stuff's gone. It's the party of Saul Alinsky. It's the party of Barack Obama. It's the party of Cuba. It's the party of Venezuela. It's the party of socialism leading to communism. Get it straight, people. She was inspired by Ivanka Trump's Women's Global Development and Prosperity Initiative. Michelle co-founded the Trump Towel. Saw the Trump Towel. Right, where proceeds go to Gold Star families for the service to our country. What a fine thing. As co-chair for the Jews for Trump Coalition during the 2016 elections, she championed for Israel's rights and rallied on Capitol Hill against anti-Semitism. And she's been going nonstop like the Energizer Bunny, you know, just trying to get people, Jews in particular, to leave the Democratic Party. I welcome back to the show Michelle Terrison. She's going to bring her posse on a little bit later, but I want to start out talking with Michelle. Michelle, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I missed you. How are things down in Florida? I couldn't get down there to win, you know, to John DeLimmy's thing, and I know you guys tore it up, and I'm sitting here in my hidden bunker looking at your camera videos of the event, but boy, you guys rocked it, and you've been rocking this Jexit movement for quite a long time. Please tell people why you started the movement, what it does, and what kind of success it's had.
Well, before I start, are you going to be at the We the People Fight Back event in August, hopefully?
It's not, as I told John, my lane is doing this radio show from my hidden bunker. It's really not for me to travel very much and get out. So, no, because John asked me about 10 times that Rock the Red. That's like the only thing I would really go to, and I did not speak. And I really felt bad in a way because I told John I would speak, but I understand what my calling is, and my calling is to do this radio show, and God is blessing it, and I'm going to stay in my lane. So
amazing.
I won't be traveling. You see, he's blessed this show. Look at the type of guests. And I got General Flynn coming on the 26th of – this doesn't – I haven't done the show a year yet.
Wow.
You know,
amazing.
Yeah, so I'm going to stay in my lane and take my blessing. So I'll have to give you a hug someplace else. So sorry.
Well, we'll be there, but I just wanted to say I've been listening to the show, and I mean, it's a, I've gone through all emotions, tears, laughter. It's been an amazing show tonight. So we're really blessed and honored that you are having us tonight. And thank you so much for the support you've given us as well.
Thank you very
much. You asked the question, how did we start this organization and the movement? We were the original Jewish girls that coined the phrase "Stop the Steal." Our claim to starting this activism was when we exposed the attempted steal and fraud of the 2018 Supervisor of Elections in Lauderhill with the infamous Brenda Snipes, when they tried to rob our great governor of his win. And so what happened was we found the ballot ties in the parking lot that were snipped from the ballot boxes, the trucks coming in, they wouldn't allow Republican, guardian to watch the count, the recount. And as it turned out, thankfully, believe it or not, when they did do the recount, the Jewish vote was what tipped the scale, 31,000. And at that moment, I had already, I believe, started Jexit, but it was so empowering to be able to make such a difference. Hannity called us on the phone, and I was exposing 900 convicted felons that voted, and I was getting nowhere because nobody cared. It was unbelievable. Like, they wanted me to open my own investigation, and I saw what was going on firsthand. I had calls from all over the country begging me to come stop their steal. And I just began to just take one foot in front of the other and just do God's will for my life, and committed my life to doing exactly what he led me to do. And in doing so, we fight several different fronts. We're fighting the greatest rise in anti-Semitism the world's ever seen. We are helping to helping bully Jewish children that are fighting, a horrific Jew hatred in the school, and they're coining it freedom of speech. So we fought at the school board in Palm Beach regarding that principal that couldn't say whether or not the Holocaust existed. So my question to everyone in this world is, how come racists are bad people, but anti-Semites are good people that just don't understand? You have a swastika on the board, and the child's being told you belong in an oven. I know I'm going off, but you belong in the oven, and we're going to come with vests to blow you up. And I can't get any media, and no Jewish agency will help because they're all left-leaning. So we stand up, speak out. That doesn't make international news, but a noose does.
Yeah.
I say it like it is, Gary. That's not freedom of speech. That's Jew hatred.
Well, I got to ask you this question because I had David Horowitz on my last broadcast, and, he was raised by communist parents in Queens, New York. They had escaped, left Russia, his grandparents, and his parents were Stalinists here in the United States, right down the road from me, and he found his way out. But I'm just stunned by people, Jews who came from like Russia or Poland or someplace. Their grandparents escaped communism. They know what it looks like. They know what it smells like. They come to the United States, and then they join the Democratic Party. I don't get it. Please explain this.
Well, then they
turn on people like you.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, I'm a Jewish xenophobe. That's my latest coined title. It's unbelievable. That's the number one question that we get asked most is, why do Jews vote left? And I have my talking points that I share, and it's quite overwhelming when people hear what I say, because it's, the vast majority of Jews, American Jews, they don't really care about Judaism or Israel. They care about secular leftism.
There you go.
And that's their religion.
That's it.
So I can show you the polls that American Jews are the least religious of all religious groups in America. And I can go through, if we have time, I can go through the numbers. But if not, it's mind-blowing. It's absolutely mind-blowing. They're not religious. They're secular leftists. They don't want to be labeled white. And most Jews don't even know or don't even care about, you know, the commandments or a Torah lifestyle. So it shouldn't be surprising that they tend to vote left, right? The Torah actually opposes abortion, and it doesn't believe in a grand welfare system, but in private charity. And it dictates that Jews have a responsibility to live ethically according to a set of specific behavioral guidelines. They hijack what's known as this tikkun olam, which is to repair the world. But the problem is, with their social justice warriorship, they leave out one main thing, Gary. You know what that main thing is?
I'm listening.
God. Judaism is conservative in the modern parlance, but, you know, that's why Jews vote three to one for Democrats. The Orthodox Jews nearly vote 2-1 for Republicans. So we try to explain, again, like you did, that Democrats are not the party of JFK any longer, and they're not even the party of the Clintons. But the modern Democrat Party is so left-leaning that things that just 10 years ago would have been seen as bipartisan or something that we could find common ground in have been labeled bigoted. So we talk about the intersectional coalition of victimhood, gender pronoun obsession, abortion until birth, and every hard push to the left across the spectrum has made this a different party than it was 20 years ago and even, you know, 50, 60 years ago. But the older Jews vote leftist. That's the older Jews do, because you know why? They remember the legacy of the European Christianity that preyed on Jews for centuries. And they don't realize our number one talking point, that the American Christians are Jews' best
friends,
not the American left.
There you go.
So,
and the American Christian supports Israel. The American Christians support Israel.
Yep.
Chucky Schmucky does not.
That's correct. And we thank our Christian brothers and sisters. We extend our hands to them. We ask them, because we know, listen, the Jews are the canary in the coal mine. Once they get rid of us, they're coming after you guys. We must unite, because, you know, we ask you to eject the Democrat Party. You know what I'm asking people now? Eject it from evil. Choose God. Choose to vote the Bible.
There you go. Michelle, we're going to bring your posse in here now to give you some backup, because this group has been making great strides, and we want to find out what's been going on and how the numbers and how many people are being flipped. So I'm going to bring on Sophia Manolescu, who's the programming director. Now, she was born in communist Romania. Now, next week, we'll have on Virginia Prodan again, who faced down an assassin's gun that was brought by Nicholas Sessa. I can never pronounce his name, Sessescu. Right, I can never get his name. Virginia's like, Jelly, you cannot say his name right.
Sessescu.
Right, Sessescu, right. So she was born there under socialist dictatorship. Her family escaped the regime when she was 11 years old. She speaks several languages. She's going to tell us what she does. She's the programming director and secretary for the Ejected Movement. And I also saw her on the heavy bag and boxing gloves. So don't let the looks fool you, man. She'll knock you out if you try and mess with her. And also, right, well, and I know about you, Michelle, I've seen some of your workouts, so I know, I'm not going to tell them what you know, but if somebody wants to jump you, they'll regret it. And then we're bringing on Marie Fisher, who's the Director of Community Relations, originally from Memphis, a resident now of Baltimore City. She's an IT specialist with 20 years of experience involved in communications, and she will tell about all her associations with Jexit and other movements, as involves Maryland Federation of Republican Women's and other things. I welcome to the show Marie and Sophia, and either one of you can take the first question. How did the two of you become involved in this movement, and how has the movement grown since the 2016 election?
Well, Michelle, this is Sophia speaking. First of all, thank you so much for having us on the show. This is a great show.
Welcome.
I love what I'm hearing here. And Michelle and I met behind Brenda Snipes, supervisor of election, when they were trying to steal the election from DeSantis and give it to Gillum. And thank God that didn't happen because, as you all know, it would have been a complete disaster. And so we met behind the supervisor of election protesting the attempted theft of the election. And like Michelle said, we found evidence of theft, and we were there for a whole week protesting, and we basically brought the truth to light, and we became friends. We liked each other, we became friends, and then Michelle started Jexit, and I gravitated naturally toward what she was doing, because I believed in the cause and I saw what was going on, and we couldn't get any traction. And together we are stronger. In fact, that's our hashtag, together we are stronger. And so that's how we became involved. That's
and
how
Sophia,
I became involved.
Don't forget the rally. We went to Capitol Hill.
And then we went to Capitol Hill, and we rallied against the anti-Semites in Congress, and that was awesome. And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit. In a little while, after I do my introduction, I want Marie to introduce herself too, so I don't want to monopolize. I don't want to monopolize all the time. We'll get back to, why don't you say how we met, and then we can continue on there.
Okay. I met because I was invited by Alexandra to come speak at the Jexit rally that took place outside Capitol in D.C. Somehow, when I gave my speech, well, first I'll give you a little background. I am Black and Jewish. I had an Orthodox conversion to Judaism. And Breitbart sort of singled out me with a couple of others, and that ended up being the featured clip. So that was the first time I met Michelle and Sophia and Karen, and that's how I first got involved with the whole Jexit group.
Well, Marie, the obvious question for you, because most people get it one way. Either you're Black and they say you're this, that, or the other thing, or you're Jew and they say you're this, that, or the other thing. But to be Black and a Jew, you're getting it from two different angles. Do you actually get more anti-left vitriol than the average person would?
Probably so, because I've been out and about, even if they don't know I'm Jewish, just because I'm conservative and Black, you hear – I've had people say, oh, you must not be educated, or you don't know better, or just the most ignorant and stupid thing. And if they said it to any other Black person, somebody would call them a racist, especially another leftist would call them a racist in a heartbeat. But to say it to a Black conservative, you know, they don't care. I don't hear as much as because I'm Jewish, but I also hear a lot of more anti-Semitism. Because, you know, people won't talk about you in front of you. Like, I don't hear racism because no one wants to say that flat out 100% racism. But I hear people say things about Jews all the time because they just assume, oh, she's Black, she's not Jewish, we can talk about Jews around her. So there are talks sometimes when I stop them.
So
and,
you're like the secret agent. And,
yeah.
You know, it's like you'll know this. There's a lot of people that don't understand what passing means. But passing is a light-skinned Black that looks white and actually lives their life as if they're white. And there have been a number of Blacks that have done this down through the centuries. Others that may not actually be passing for white, but they look white, so they just don't tell people that they're not. And white people would say things that my godfather's like that. He looked like Tyrone Power, and people would just say things around him thinking he was you know, a white guy, and he wasn't, and he knew we're all the, you know. So you're saying you hear a lot of this anti-Semitism that they're trying to hide. They'll say it in front of you because they think you're down with that program.
Mm-hmm. And I hear Black and white. It's not just one group. You hear it. I hear it from everybody. And it's just shocking. It's surprising. And, you know, I have a couple other friends. We feel like this past year has been rough because we're fighting, you know, from the anti-Semitic part, we're fighting the left, more the left than the right, but I'm fighting left and right. And then when we had everything come out with George Floyd, I found myself, again, fighting the left a little on the right, and it's just tiring.
I got you. Now, honest question, honest answer, because this is a show, my show is about truth. Honest answer, the people that do this, the people that will make the anti-Semitic, is it more Democrats, more Republicans, mixed? How does it break down percentage-wise?
What I've dealt with, it's been mixed. Because a lot of times, I mean, I've heard this stuff before. You know, I'm talking about this going back, because I've been Jewish for almost 30 years. This is going back before we became more of a polarized country. So I always heard stuff. So I never knew their political leanings. It's just you hear stuff. But as it goes on and on, I do hear it more from the left. You hear some from the right, but I hear a lot more from the left. Because I think, you know, a lot of times they do stuff. They don't consider themselves racist. They don't consider themselves anti-Semitic. You know, you've got a congressman out of Connecticut who belongs to an all-white country club. His wife is a major shareholder, yet the people in Connecticut are not holding him
accountable.
Mm-hmm. Accountable to this. So that's what I'm saying. They see it like, oh, well, it's not me. I'm not racist, but I belong to all this and that. I'm not making a real effort to do anything. I'm just, again, virtual signaling.
I hear you there. Sophia, you know,
yes.
this is the question I've had so many people on the show that have come from other communist countries. Their parents came from there or their grandparents, and they have overt, clear-cut knowledge and understanding. You escaping a communist country at the age of 11, which is still a kid, but having parents, what was it? Is it like for you when you see American Jews buying in to Marxism, which is going to obviously be the bridge that leads to socialism, which leads to communism if they could ever get that constitution out of here?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of what Michelle was saying is true, but people fail to understand, and you know, Jews, and I know that a lot of Jews actually don't know this because I brought this up to them, what I'm about to say, and they did not know. They did not know that there are only 15 million Jews in the world, all right? That is like, out of the whole population of the world, 0.002%. They're like a 0.2%, 0.02% of the American population, a tiny minority, and half of them live in Israel. So the first thing is an attack on Israel is an attack on the Jewish people. It is anti-Semitism because that is the land of the Jews. And this thought process does not occur. They do not understand this thought process. They don't have this thought process. They say, oh, Israel's going to be fine. You know, Israel's got to, you know, they can defend themselves. And they don't pay attention to what's going on in Congress. They don't pay attention that the so-called, you know, they call them, you know, Bernie Sanders a Jew. Bernie Sanders is not a Jew. He might have Jewish heritage, but he's a secular fake Jew. They don't pay attention to what's going on. They don't know that Sanders, for example, introduced a resolution to block $735 million worth of sales of the precision-guided weapons to Israel, which is the this is what they put into the Iron Dome, which is the missile defense system.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know that Bernie Sanders, a leftist quote-unquote Jew who's actually an atheist who hates Israel, is allied against Israel with the enemies of Israel. And these are things that don't matter to them, and they don't pay attention because they're not attached to the homeland, and they feel a false sense of security. They think that if they align themselves with the forces on the left, that they're going to be protected because they've got in government Jews defending them in government on the left. And that to them is a big deal. They think that because you've got these Chuck Schumer and Bernie Sanders characters in the U.S. government, that the Jewish population is actually safe. And they are wrong because those people in government don't care about the Jews. They are swamp. They don't care about the Jews any more than they care about America. So it's frustrating trying to break through the wall and talk common sense because the cognitive dissonance makes people angry. They won't listen. The moment you face them with facts, they become very defensive, and it's hard to get through to them. And no matter how much I try to point it out, for example, we're talking about Bernie Sanders saying, and I quote him, "We need to take a hard look at whether the sale of these weapons is actually helping to defend Israel or whether it is simply fueling conflict. And, you know, getting back to these weapons, fueling conflict, the Iron Dome stopped 4,300 rockets from landing
rockets,
into
right.
Israel.
Bing, bing, bing.
Rockets, right. So how can they say, is this helping or is it just exacerbating the conflict?
Yeah, no, this is crazy.
It's insane, yeah. Right. It's crazy talk. It's crazy talk. And
crazy.
They're also mm-hmm.
Michelle, we're running down towards the end of the show. You're welcome all three to come back. I'll bring you on again. We can talk longer. But, Michelle, right now, please tell us what is going on with Jexit, what has been going on, and are you really flipping boats? Like, how much success is Jexit having right now changing the minds of Democrats?
Well, I'll tell you one of our greatest feats was that at the 2016 election in the state of Florida, the Jewish vote was 29%. Jexit was founded in 2018. In 2020, the Jewish vote, ready, drum roll, everybody, was 43%. We were tremendously instrumental in waking up our fellow Jews, in uniting. That's really what I feel my purpose in this life is, that my God-given purpose is to really bring that Esther for such a time as this spirit here, because as you know, one person can change, you know, save a nation. All of us Jexit girls, we're a family, we're a team, we are driven, we're committed to continue this. We know that the state of Florida is really the new Jerusalem. We must reelect our great governor. We have started a new club called the America First Patriots Club, because we know there's some Biden buyer's remorse Democrats out there.
There you go.
And we have started this incredible club.
In Broward,
in the blue machine, the corrupt blue machine. And we had standing room only at our June 8th grand opening. We had our spokesperson, Siggy Flicker, and Scott Pressler. We had music, fun, sharing testimonials, education. We aren't, you know, preaching to the choir. We're going to call out the rhinos. We're going to call out we're going to call everybody out, really. We're going to speak the truth. We are going back to God, country, and family.
There you
we
go.
Have got to have that revival.
We're voting out the rhinos.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
There you go. Michelle, please tell, we got 30 seconds, Michelle, please tell people
sure.
how they can reach at Jexit Movement, how they can contact you.
Our website is Jexit, JexitUSA.org. You can find everything you need there. We'd love to get some chapters going all over the country. We know that women win elections, and we empower others to speak out and not be afraid. We are about canceling. We're going to cancel culture. We do not believe in it.
Thank you very much. You know, I really appreciate you coming on. I will have you back on again. The founder of the Jexit Movement, Michelle Terrace, along with Marie Fisher and Sophia Manalesco, thank you for coming on, and keep up the good work. Don't let them
thank
grind you,
you
down.
Thank you for everything you do. You're amazing.
Well, I try. You sound like Dilemmy there, but thanks very much. I try. All right. There we go. Sophia, Michelle, and Marie. And I want to thank Thomas Holman, Eliana Brooks, and Eric Cochran, my other guests. I thought this was quite a show. We dropped a lot of knowledge. I'll be back on next week with the first anniversary show. John Dilemmy, Morgan Brittany, Gene Ho, Claire Lopez, Dr. Elena George, Ron Edwards, the smoothest voice in radio, Lucretia Hughes, Virginia Prodan, and Nick Searcy, along with my producers, James Bostic, Melissa Petrie, and the owner of the Patriot Nation Radio Network, Mark Hoffman. And then circle your calendars, 26th of July, General Michael Flynn will be here at 7 o'clock. Until next week, God bless you, God bless America. And just everybody, hold on and hang out because the best is yet to come.